Parsha Toldot, we have 83 years. 83 years. The last Parsha was all of 3 years. Right? Chayesar was all of 3 years. Now we have 83 years from the wedding of Yitzhak and Rivka to the brachot given to their children, Yaakov and Esav. Yitzhak and Rivka are married for 20 years without any children. And they daven, both of them. They daven, and their prayers are answered. During pregnancy, though, Rivka is disturbed by some sort of unusual movement in her stomach. Clearly, it's not just baby kicking. Any woman that she would ask would say, yeah, it happens all the time. But it's somewhat, you know, unusual. And she goes to inquire from Hashem. That's what the pasuk says. Now, what does that mean, to inquire from Hashem? So Pashup Shah probably is that she davens. But it seems, since it says she went, that she went to someone. Since she probably doesn't want to make her husband Yitzhak anxious that something might be wrong, she goes to someone to inquire. According to Rashi, who's that someone? Anyone know?
Shame.
Shame. Did you hear any other ideas? So Rashi says shame. The Ibn Ezra says Avram. I thought that was cool. Like shame, okay, yeah, he might still be alive, but Avram makes more sense. You go to her, you know, go to her father-in-law. So she went to Avram, says, don't tell Yitzhak, I'm not scared. But I thought that was cool when I saw the Ibn Ezra, because I always brought up, as I tell you all the time, always brought up on Rashi. I know Rashi. So it's cool when you see these other things that, to me, at least makes a little more sense. So, or to Avram. And she is told, this we have in the Pesukim, that you're going to give birth to two children, twins, but they're going to turn into two nations. And the older will serve the younger. And that's significant, as we will see soon. She gives birth. Esav is described as a redhead. Not just a redhead, a hairy redhead. Okay? Must have been Sephardi. We Ashkenazim. Got no hair. So he's a Sephardi redhead. What? You're not Ashkenazi? I said it's Sephardi.
Is Yaakov Ashkenazi?
I don't know. I'm not saying he might have been hairy also, but not nearly as hairy as Esav. Esav was redhead. He was hairy. That's what Esav means. Esav means hairy. Right? And Yaakov, why is he called Yaakov?
Because
he's grabbing onto the heel of his brother. His brother's stepping on him, right? Or he's always going follower, ikvot Yaakov. But that's sort of the scene is Esav stepping down on Yaakov. Yaakov's holding on to his heel.
Babies aren't born with hair.
He was. That's not true. Babies are born with hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe not on their body so much, but on their head. Some babies have a lot of hair on their head.
Some babies are born with hair everywhere.
Right. So I haven't seen Sephardi babies, but I've seen Sephardi babies.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I had one student, Benny had a Persian student, guys told me, call him the Persian carpet, head to toe, covered. So maybe the baby also. Esav seemingly was a Persian carpet, okay? So he's hairy, that's what they called him, and Yaakov is Yaakov. What?
You don't have to edit that out.
I shouldn't have said it. I said it. Whatever. It said. I mean, I said worse about you, so this is nothing. Okay, Rashi says... Oh, sorry. Okay, Mom, Dad, didn't mean that. I was talking to Solomon. Now, Rashi says... red-headed Esav will be a spiller of blood. Be a spiller of blood. Is that a bad thing?
No.
Ostensibly, yes, but why no? Good. Okay, there is a Gemara that says if you're born under a certain constellation, you will be a spiller of blood. Okay, I think it's Shabbos Kuf Yotet. And the Gemara says, but it doesn't mean you have to be like Jack the Ripper. You could be a Shochet, that's what you said. You could be a Moel. Okay, who else was a redhead in Tanakh?
David.
And when Shmuel was told to anoint a son of Yishai, and David comes in from the field and he's got redhead, he got, according to Midrash, he gets scared. Because what does he think? He associates redhead with Esav. Okay? But, and did David spill blood? Yes, lots and lots of blood.
He's a shepherd, he kills like...
Not just that, he fought so many wars.
Oh, okay.
David fought wars. The pasuk says that the women would sing, Shaul killed his thousands, David his tens of thousands. So, spilling blood doesn't necessarily mean it's evil. David became a warrior. Okay? Reish Lakish, according to like Kabbalistic teachings, is a Gilgal Neshama of Esav. He had been a gladiator, and then he came back into the base Medrash, and he used all the energy that he had to become, you know, one of the greatest Amoraim that we have in Shas. So having the energy and doing these things certainly doesn't make you evil. I'm a surgeon today, right? So Esav had this, didn't necessarily mean he had to be evil, but this is the way Chazal view it. The redhead means spiller of blood, but as we said, based on the constellation or based on the hair color, doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be a tzaddik or a rasha. Just means that is your netzia, that is your inclination. Now, do with it something positive. Okay, yeah.
Who said, or whose opinion was it that Reish Lakish? Maybe the...
I don't know. It's some Kabbalistic sefer. I'm not up on Kabbalah, but I did hear that once. Okay, I can make it up and tell you the Ari said it, and you wouldn't know. And maybe it is even the Ari, but I don't know. Okay. When they got older, we see that they had different character traits. Esav is a hunter, and Yaakov goes jumping around from tent to tent. Oh well, he's Yoshev Oalim. He went from like yeshiva to yeshiva, you know, to learn. He was in one yeshiva, Shana Betty went somewhere else, Shana Gimel somewhere else. I don't know, he went learning around different yeshivas. And he was pure-minded. He's Yaakov Ish Tam. Tam is a pure, straightforward person. And what are we told? Yitzchak loved Esav, and Rivka loved Yaakov. Rav Shimshon Fal Hirsch says a very insightful comment on that pasuk. He blames the parents for the way Esav turned out. He said their upbringing was the same. How did they not notice that the kids were so different? To try to make Esav keep the same educational format as Yaakov is a disservice to Esav. Esav and Yaakov are not the same person. To try to make them do the exact same thing is not okay. And therefore, if Esav went off the derech, you know, that's what we're going to say, went off Yitzchak and Rivka's derech, says Rav Hirsch, it's because of the parents. Not noticing the differences and not saying, okay, he needs a different educational system. In Israel, it's very, very common. In America, less so. It's very, very common. You say, oh, how many like sons do you have? Four. Where do they go to high school? Oh, he went to this one, he went to this. Like, four kids, four different high schools. Right? It's very common here to send your kids all to like different places. Maybe it's just there's more options, right? Certainly if you live in a place where there's only one yeshiva high school, you don't have that many options. Maybe here there are more options. But it's like probably the norm. Okay, this kid needs this, this kid needs this. And that's Rav Hirsch saying you can't give everyone the same cookie-cutter education. We are told that Esav comes from the field and he requests from his brother the lentil soup that he's cooking. Lentil soup that's on the fire. He calls it the red stuff. Give me some of the red stuff. According to the Midrash, I think we mentioned it last year. According to the Midrash, why is Yaakov making a lentil soup? Because lentil soup is served to a mourner. Mourners have a minhag to eat, certainly the first meal, something that is round. Sometimes we give them eggs. Probably in America they give bagels. They give bagels for everything. You know, and lentils are also round. And the idea is like a cycle of life. So according to the Midrash, it tells making lentil soup, this is the day that Avram Avinu passed away. And Esav comes back. Here it is. Funeral's over. Yitzhak's there. Yaakov's there. He's looking around. Where's the other? Are there twins? Where's the twin? I don't know. They're looking up. And now they come back. Yitzhak's sitting Shiva. Everyone's sitting around. They're comforting him. Yaakov's making soup. And Esav comes in from the field. Give me the red stuff. Say Chazal that sometimes we make our own reputations. Based on that incident, what did everyone now just call him? Red. And Esav hu Edom. Chazal say that the nation of Edom, which is from Adam, which is red, we call refer to as Rome, it comes from Esav, all from this incident of this one time, this tactless, give me the red stuff while everyone's sitting Shiva. Okay. Esav disrespects the Bechorah. As the firstborn, he now has extra responsibilities and extra privileges. That's what happens when you're firstborn. I mentioned Rav Hirsch before. Rav Hirsch wanted to say the reason why the Torah gives a double portion to the firstborn is because A, the parents made all the mistakes on him, and B, all the extra responsibilities are always given to the firstborn. So Yaakov says to Esav, I'll give you the suit if you sell it to me for the rights of the firstborn. And Esav disrespects these quote-unquote rights, and he very quickly sells that for a pot of soup. And Yaakov is only, he's thrilled to get this, because for Yaakov, he says, I'm carrying on the legacy of Avram Avinu. Went from Avram to Yitzhak, now it's going to Yaakov. For him, it's a legacy. For Esav, it's a burden. And unfortunately, we know, this is the exact same way people view mitzvot. Some people view it as, what a privilege. I was chosen to be part of the Jewish people. Goyim only have 7 mitzvot. I have 613. I have 613 ways to get close to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. This is amazing. I'm part of the chosen people. And you have other people that say, 7 I could have handled. Why do I have to give you another 606? What a pain in the neck. Same way that these two brothers viewed the Bechorah, unfortunately today, we have many Jews with the same attitudes, the polar opposite attitudes. How do I view a mitzvah? How do I view being Jewish? Is it a privilege or is it a burden? Kobe, what do you want to say?
Did they know that the older brother, whoever was the poor, is going to rule over the other one?
No. It would seem that Rivka would not tell the kids that. Right? Okay. Yitzhak goes now to Avimelech in Grar. Grar is in the area of the Plishtim. Avimelech is the standard name for kings of the Plishtim. Okay, the fact that Avram went to Avimelech doesn't mean that Yitzhak went to the same person. Same way that Paro is the standard name for kings from Egypt. Avimelech is the standard name for kings from the land of the Plishtim. Famine breaks out in Israel, and Yitzhak at first thinks to go to Egypt like his father Avram did. God says, no, you can't leave Israel. So he goes to the land of the Plishtim. That was another location that Avram had gone with his wife. So Yitzhak now goes with Rivka to the land of the Plishtim. When people find out, you know, that he's together with his wife Rivka, and he thinks that they might kill him to get to her, he, like Avram, lies and says that she's not his wife, but instead his sister. When Avimelech, however, notices them acting as a couple, I guess they didn't shut the shades and didn't look what they were doing, like the brothers and sisters do. So he calls them out on that, says, why are you lying to me? And says, I feared for my life. I feared for my life. So I lied. Avimelech sends him away, not just like with gifts like we had before with Avram, but with protection. Said, I'll send men to protect you. No one's going to do anything to you. You stay here as long as you want, and I'll send out people to protect you. Yitzhak now starts to work fields, and they produce 100 times the amount of crops that a field usually would produce. The way that you say that phrase 100 times in the Torah is, anyone know? Mea Sharim. You guys go up to Mea Sharim, it's from here. Mea Sharim is 100-fold, 100 times.
So 100 times more religious?
Are they 100 times more religious? Not than you. Not than you. Than you. They're not even more religious. Right? But that's just what the phrase means. You should know Mea Sharim just for your own edification. The first community outside of the old city walls, when Jews came back to resettle the land in the beginning of the 20th century, the first city built outside was Yamin Moshe. Yamin Moshe named after who? Which philanthropist from England knighted Solomon? Moses Montefiore. Sir Moses Montefiore. Yamin Moshe. So who would move out to those neighborhoods? Only people who were fighters, right? You might be attacked by the Arabs, so people had guns, people that were ready to defend themselves. They didn't want to just stay in the walled city. Move to Yamin Moshe. The next, you know, city that people moved to, all the young fighters was Mea Sharm. Okay? So that's where that was the next city, the outside of the walls of the old city. Anyway, back to here. Why did he get a hundredfold? Because of, obviously, Birchat Hashem, Kadosh Baruch Hu gave him. Now, out of jealousy, the Plishtim, they're so jealous at how successful Yitzchak is, they decide to now stop up the wells that Avraham had dug. So Yitzchak redigs those wells, and they stop them up again. Okay, the first two anyway, he redigs one, they stop it up, they redig two, they stop it up. He redigs the third, and the third one they don't stop up, that stays. And that third one is called Rehovot, right? We have a city in Israel named Rehovot. And according to the Ramban, those three wells signify the Batei Mikdash. The first two that they stopped up are the first two that were destroyed. And the third that they didn't, that's the third Beit HaMikdash that Yecheskel talks about, you know, towards the end of Sefer Yecheskel, Binyan Bayit Shlishi, Benher B'Yameinu, and those are the three wells. Now, from there he goes to Be'er Sheva and builds a Mizbeach. Abimelech sees Hashem is with him and makes a bris near these wells. And this bris, where they, since they take a Shavua, what's a Shavua? And a promise, an oath. They call the area Be'er Sheva. Sheva from Shavua. Now, why would the Plishtim stop up the wells? It's, you know, why would you do that? It just harms you. Everyone needs the water. So the first answer could be that they resented the Jew turning the desert into fertile land. Okay? And they were willing to cut off their noses despite their faces. And unfortunately, we saw that in modern times as well, when Jews came back and built up Israel and people felt they needed to destroy it. Okay? They just resented it, even though it was in their best interest. Okay? I once heard, I didn't find this, I once tried to look it up on the internet, I didn't find it's in writing, but I once heard that the country of Jordan refused for decades to give their citizens the polio vaccination because Jews were the ones who, you know, found it, and therefore they refused to use it. So once again, cutting off your nose to spite your face. But this is the first answer. Second answer is, this is more like a drasha, the well, the be'er, mayim, always signifies Torah, right? And therefore, what does it mean that they stopped up the wells? All the people that Avraham converted to monotheism, now that he died, the goyim came and brought them back to paganism, and Yitzchak went to redig the wells, means he went and was makarid them back. Okay? This is an idea. I once made the mistake. First year I'm living in Israel, I'm living in Neve Daniel, not in Israel, living in Neve Daniel. It's like Hoshana Rabbah or Shmini Atzeres, when we have all these tefillot for rain, and I get up there and I speak, you know, all this tefillos geshem, we don't really mean rain, in Mayim Ela Torah, we're talking about Torah, it's all Torah, Torah, Torah. Okay. And when I finish, guy comes over and he goes, "You're an idiot. It's rain. We're agriculturalists. We're trying to grow things. It's about rain. Stop with your chutzlar. It's everything's Torah." He goes, "I grew up in a kibbutz. We need the rain. That's it. It has nothing to do with that." And I was like, "Oh, okay." But this is my chutzlar. It's attitude to everything. Third idea. Is where was that? Third idea to learn from this is that Yitzchak personifies Gvura. What was the Gvura? The Gvura was, they stopped it up, I'll redig it. They stopped it up, I'll redig it. I'm not giving in. I'm going to continue the path of my father. He made the well, I'm going to continue. Elie Wiesel, probably the most famous survivor of the Holocaust, he referred to Yitzchak Avinu as a survivor. What was he surviving? From that Kedah. His near-death experience, he called him a survivor. And he said, the greatness of any survivor is to just to continue. To not give up. To continue. And the truth is, all the trailblazers, they get the credit. Everyone remembers the founder of a movement. No one really remembers the second-generation guy. But without the second-generation guy, It's a one-hit wonder. There is no movement. Right? So Yitzhak continues. And Pass says he's the next link in the chain to Yaakov. So he continues. Even if Yitzhak did nothing except just following in his father's footsteps, says Elie Wiesel, that's enough. Survivor continues and passes on. Now, Esav marries at the age of 40, as I'll point out. That's the age that his father got married. So he's getting married now at the age of 40. He marries two girls from Chet. And this causes anguish to the parents. Okay? Not happy with the choice of his wives. At this point now, we pick up the parasha. Yitzhak is 123 years old. And he feels he's old. He doesn't know how much longer he's going to live. And he calls his son Esav in and says, I want to give you a bracha. Go make me a good meal. Go hunt. And bring back some food and make me a good meal. And I want to give you a bracha before I die. Now, why the need for food? Rabbeinu Bachaye says, if you look in Tanakh, sometimes Nevi'im, specifically I can remember Elisha, he wanted to get Nevuah, and he asks for someone to come and play music. And that will put him in the proper mood for him to be able to get Nevuah. The bracha that Yaakov wanted to give was going to be a bracha that was going to be inspired from God. He needed to be in the right frame of mind. For him, it was a good meal that was going to put him in the right mood. Okay? Some people's music for him was good food. And he would then be able to give a bracha. This is Rabbeinu Bachaye. I saw a different idea. I think this is the Abarbanel that says, what made Esav special? In what way was Esav better than Yaakov? Anyone know? What does the Gemara say? What?
What
does the Gemara say?
He's actually older.
Keep it out of him. So what does Yitzhak want to do? I want to give you a bracha, b'schus, the one thing that you're great at. Go now, be mekayim in the midst of keep it out of him. And b'schus, your fulfilling my wishes, I'll be able to give you this bracha. There is another idea. This, I don't know if this is my idea or not. I don't remember if when I say these things, but this is based on the Sefer HaChinuch. Sefer HaChinuch says part of Kibud Av V'Em, the main part of Kibud Av V'Em, is Hakaras HaTov. Therefore, Yitzhak assumed if Esav has so much Hakaras HaTov from me, it shows he has developed his midah of Hakaras HaTov, he obviously must have such a great relationship with God as well. Which would help us try to understand why is it that Yitzhak wanted to give Esav a bracha, you know, why he was worthy of giving him a bracha. Yes?
We know that Esav was not exactly this. He didn't shechtem, he just like killed him with his knife.
There was no Torah yet. He didn't have to shecht.
I thought they still kept.
Okay, maybe. Different opinions if they kept the mitzvah enough. And if they did, who says he didn't shecht it?
And I thought Yitzchak never liked Rivka. I thought...
What?
Like you said before, Yitzchak liked Esav and Rachel...
Rivka liked Yaakov.
Yeah. I thought that since Yaakov liked Rivka more and that they were closer, I thought Yaakov, he still respected his father, but like was like, what are you doing? Like, why are you respecting Esav? And vice versa, that Esav...
I don't know. It doesn't say. It's just what the parents felt. We don't know what the kids felt.
Oh, I got it.
Even so, we have a question. And the question would be, granted, so Esav does keep it out of aim, but do you not see the difference between Esav and Yaakov? Why are you ignoring Yaakov? So this is for sure my idea, and you can throw it out, but I'm thinking like this. How do we describe Yaakov? Passive, right? He's sitting and learning. How would we describe Yitzhak? Pretty much passive. Who's Yitzhak's role model? Avram. Avram's a go-getter. Avram's willing to go fight kings. Avram's like, you know, he's a man that's, you know, sees what he wants and he goes and gets it. Who reminds Yitzhak of his father? Esav. And maybe that's why. He saw, like, Yaakov was no big deal for him. Yaakov was like, yeah, that's what I'm like. Sort of like passive. Yaakov, I mean, but Esav's like my father. Avram's the man. Maybe. Again, everyone has to ask this question, and I'll give you some more answers, but the main question is, do you not see who Yaakov is? So my suggestion is, he does, and he's disappointed, because he sees in Yaakov himself, but he sees in Esav his father. Okay? Still, there's a problem with the story at the Brachot, because when does he decide he wants to give the Brachot? Right after the pasuk that says, Esav married these women from Chet, and it brought pain to the parents. So right after that pasuk, he says, oh, let me give Brachot to Esav. Just ended with saying, Esav brought pain to the parents. So now giving a bracha? It's a little bit weird. So how do you understand it? If they're disappointed in this choice of a spouse. But Malbim has a beautiful idea. Malbim says like this. He suggests that there were two brachot that Yitzchak wanted to give. One, he never intended to give to Esav. And that's what we call Birchat Avram. To carry on the legacy of Avram, he was never going to give that to Esav. He knew that Esav was not the person for that. That was always going to go to Yaakov. But there was a bracha of Gashmias. There was a bracha of material success. And that he was going to give to Esav. Why? Because as opposed to Avram, who was told by God specifically, Ki bi Yitzchak ki karelecha zera, Yitzchak will be your seed. Yitzchak was never told, Ki bi Yaakov ki karelecha zera. So he thinks, maybe both my boys can be involved in this enterprise. How? Esav will be the money man. Yaakov will be the spiritual man. They'll have a relationship no different than Yisachar Zvulun. Chazal tell us that Zvulun learned, Yisachar supported him, and they shared their wealth both physically and spiritually. So maybe, pardon me?
I think it was opposite. Zvulun was the traitor.
That's not what I said? Okay. Yisachar learned and Zvulun supported him. If I said it the other way, then thanks for the correction. Okay, the Malbim doesn't use that phrase. He uses the phrase of Shevet Levi being supported by Bnei Yisrael. But the same idea. And he felt, okay, Yaakov's not a man of the world. He's not capable. What good is that giving the bracha? He don't know how to do any business deals. He'll be taken advantage of. He doesn't know how to really mix it up in the real world. He doesn't mix it up with the Tosos, but he doesn't really have to mix it up in the real world. Esav will be that guy, the pragmatic guy. He'll be the, you know, the Reish Galusa. And Yaakov will be the Gaon. He'll be the Rosh Yeshiva. And they'll work together. Fantastic. This was his plan. Now, Rivka looked at Esav and said, wow, Yitzchak, you're being naive. You see the good in everybody. But I grew up in the home of Laban. I grew up in the home of Betuel. And I could tell you when some guy is not going to take the money and share it. Going to take the money, keep it for himself. You're not going to have a team over here. But, as we said last year, Rivka is still intimidated by her husband, Yitzchak, and doesn't feel she can go over and say, you're making a mistake. Right? You go over to Rav Nevinson and say, you're making a mistake? That's how she viewed her husband. I can't go over and say that. What does she have to do? I have to prove it to him that Yaakov can be a man of the world. Yaakov, and I'll show you. He'll trick you. And he deserves the bracha of Gashmias, because if you give it to Esav, Yaakov won't get it. And as the Ramban said, you can't have Torah without Kemach. Imen Kemach, ain't Torah. You need the physicality to go along with the spirituality. As the Ramban said, we need the land, and therefore the descendants need a strong economy and a strong army, and not just the Talmud Torah. We need to control our own destiny. This is the view of the Ramban. Now, since Rivka overheard the plan for the bracha to Esav, she instructs Yaakov to bring two goats, and she'll prepare the meal for Yitzchak to get the brachot. Now, Yaakov's hesitant. He doesn't want to lie to his father. You see it in the word that he uses. He says, maybe Abba will figure it out that I'm Esav. Now, there's two ways to say maybe in Hebrew. One is, like in English, you'd say maybe, or in English, you say less. What does it mean, less and maybe? Less is, oh no, lest this happen. So the way you could say it, the positive way is ulai, and the negative way is pen. What he should have said is pen, maybe, negative, he'll catch me. But he says ulai. Chazal understand that as he wanted to be caught. He didn't want to be part of the charade. He didn't want to trick his father. So he's saying, Ima, I don't know if I could do this. Ulai, I will figure it out and he'll just curse me. I hope, you know, because I don't want to do this. And what does Rivka say? Any curses will be on me. You just listen to me. Why did Rivka say it? It goes back to what she was told when she was pregnant with the two people. She said, I know. She viewed this as a nevuah, that the younger one has to get the brachot. The younger one is going to be the ruler over the older one. And therefore, I need to make sure this happens. And she says, I'm not worried about the klalot. Any klalot are on me, they're not on you. You know, follow my instructions. Yaakov goes in disguise, receives the bracha, and then as a well-orchestrated play, as Yaakov exits stage left, Esav enters stage right, and says, I'm here for my brachas. You know, he's like, what? And at first, says that Esav shook, trembled, but then he realized what happened, and he says, Gam hu yeh mevarach. He doesn't take it back, he doesn't curse him. He realizes exactly what Rivka is saying. He did. He fooled me. He's not the Nebuch Yeshiva Bachar that I thought. And okay, let him keep the brachot. Esav begging for something. Yitzhak says, fine, I'll give you a bracha. You should be victorious in war, but your brother will be over you. The parsha ends with Esav plotting to kill Yaakov when Yitzhak dies, again out of the kibbutz of aim that he has. He won't kill him all the while that Yitzhak is alive, because that would bring pain to his father. Doesn't seem to care so much about his mother. Says, I'm going to wait until my father dies and I'll kill him. Rivka overhears and convinces Yitzhak to send Yaakov to her brother Lavan to find a wife. Again, at this point, he is 63. It is about time to find a wife. And he goes. I once heard Rav Elchanan Samet say, we are brought up on Rashi, saying that she overhears, and to save his life, she says, I need you to get out of here, so go to Lavan so that you have your life saved. And then when she says to Yaakov, she lies to Yitzhak, she doesn't want to tell him that his brother wants to, you know, his son wants to kill another son. She says, oh, and he needs a wife. Said Rav Samet, maybe it's the opposite. Maybe the truthful statement was, it's time for him to get married, and she knew the only way to get Yaakov out of the family, out of the house, to look for a wife, is to say, hey, your brother wants to kill you. But there might be an element of truth to both, but as we know, he listens, he makes his way to Lavan, we pick it up from there, next class. Go ahead.
I have to say I had that.